listening to episode 50 of the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, Creation Accounts and Ancient Near Eastern Religions by John A. Bloom and C. John Collins. This article was first published in the Christian Research Journal print edition, volume 35, number 1, in 2012. The Christian Research Journal Reads podcast presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. To read the full text and the documentation for this article, please go to equip.org. That's EQUIP.org.
Creation Accounts and Ancient Near Eastern Religions by John A. Bloom and C. John Collins. Read by Christina Wintersteller. Over the past 200 years, the science of archaeology has developed and given us direct access to documents and artifacts from the lands of the Bible. While often fragmentary and difficult to interpret, these ancient writings flesh out the cultures that surrounded and influenced ancient Israel. Of particular interest are ancient Near Eastern religious texts, because they allow us to compare the gods of Canaan, Mesopotamia, and Egypt with the God of the Bible. Since their discovery, many scholars have claimed that the religious views found in these ancient documents are hardly different from those in the Bible. In fact, the ancient Israelites simply borrowed the beliefs of their neighbors. Nowhere are these scholars more assured that Israel parroted others than in the creation account and early history found in Genesis 1 through 11. While years of study are necessary to read these creation accounts in the original languages, good English translations are now available, so that I, JB, can pass along some good advice that I received some years ago. In a class discussing the canon of Scripture, which books should be included in the Bible and which ones should not be, the instructor made this comment, quote, "It's actually very easy to tell, just read them," unquote. When investigating claims that the biblical creation account is just borrowed from elsewhere, my advice is the same. Read the other accounts, noting not only the slight similarities, but also the significant differences between them. And the Genesis account will clearly stand out as superior. In fact, many scholars today recognize that these creation stories, from which earlier scholars thought Israel had borrowed, actually have very little in common with the Bible. A Babylonian Genesis? No ancient creation account is cited more for its supposed parallels to early Genesis than the Babylonian poem called Enuma Elish, from its two opening words in Akkadian, quote, "when on high," unquote. This story includes a description of the conflict between the younger god Marduk and the older goddess Tiamat. After Marduk slew Tiamat, he used her body to make the world. Part of the appeal for this comparison comes from the simple fact that Enuma Elish was one of the first texts discovered from the ancient Near East that covers the making of the world. Further, the Akkadian name Tiamat seems to be parallel to the Hebrew word for, quote, "the deep," unquote, Tehom, Genesis 1:2. Which led some scholars to think of Genesis 1 as describing a conflict of sorts between God and the forces of nature, or even a sea monster. This gains some traction from the possibility that, quote, "without form and void," unquote, is a paraphrase for, quote, "chaos," unquote. The opening words of the Akkadian story, quote, "when on high," unquote, also influenced some to argue that the opening words of Genesis should be translated, quote, "when God began to create," unquote. See the alternate translation of the RSV. Although some biblical scholars continue to make these comparisons, Assyriologists are now less likely to endorse the comparison than formerly. Partly this is due to the work of W.G. Lambert, who argued, quote, "The first major conclusion is that the Epic of Creation," another name for Enuma Elish, "is not a norm of Babylonian or Sumerian cosmology. It is a sectarian and aberrant combination of mythological threads woven into an unparalleled compositum," unquote. Many have come to acknowledge that the supposed parallel between Babylonian Tiamat in Hebrew to home, quote, the deep, unquote, is very unlikely. The linguistic details show that there is no way that Hebrew to home can be a borrowing from Akkadian Tiamat. Likewise, quote, without form and void, unquote, Genesis 1:2 is a phrase, not for, quote, unruly and disorderly chaos, unquote, but for, quote, an unproductive and uninhabited place, unquote. Further, nothing in Genesis 1 can be reasonably said to imply any kind of struggle on God's part. Psalm 33:9, quote, for he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm, unquote, is an excellent summary of the creation story. A Babylonian Adam? The Adapa epic is a Babylonian story about a man whom many compare with the biblical Adam. In this tale, Adapa was fishing one day in the Persian Gulf when the south wind suddenly overturned his boat. Adapa cursed the wind, breaking one of its wings so that it could not blow for 7 days. Hearing of this, Anu, the sky god, summoned Adapa to give account for himself. But before Adapa went, the god Ea, whom Adapa served, instructed him on how to conduct himself in the heavenly court and warned him that they might offer him the food and water of death, which he must not eat or drink. Adapa followed Ea's instructions and found favor with Anu, who decided to offer him the food and water of life, which would have conferred immortality. But Adapa heeded Ea's warning and refused, much to Anu's astonishment, and was sent back to earth as a mortal to live among mankind, apparently bringing illness to those among whom he lived. It is possible that Adapa actually existed. He is listed as the first of the 7 Mesopotamian sages who lived before the Great Flood. No one knows when the story was first composed. The earliest tablets we have date to the 15th or 14th century BC, but the story appears to have an early Sumerian origin. Some have argued that the name Adapa could be linguistically related to Adam, since there are other examples of the PM connection. One difficulty with this idea is that forms of the proper name Adam with an M are attested as far back in West Semitic materials as we can look. This makes it harder to explain why anyone could have, quote, borrowed, unquote, a figure named Adapa with a P into a West Semitic language such as Hebrew. Indeed, the name Adapa might actually be Sumerian and thus non-Semitic, rather than Akkadian, a Semitic language related to Hebrew. Another hindrance to an easy parallel with Adam is that Adapa is a sage, an advisor to King Alulim, the first king of Sumer, according to the Sumerian king list. So Adapa is not the first or only male human, or even the foremost leader of humanity. Some interpreters suggest that Adapa had some kind of representative role for other people. They translate line 6 as, quote, Ea created him, Adapa, as a leader or model among mankind, unquote, while others call him a, quote, protecting spirit, unquote, among mankind. But even if Adapa was a leader of sorts, there is nothing in the text that implies that he had the opportunity to gain immortality for anyone other than himself. Those he may have represented, the residents of the city of Eridu, are not mentioned, and there is definitely no reason to suppose that he represented all humanity. The stories are different thematically as well. Adapa had a chance to gain immortality for himself. He was clearly not the first human, but he missed it out of obedience to instructions given him by the god he served. There is no indication that his, quote, transgression, unquote, breaking the wing of the south wind, was the first offense committed by a human being, and it is certainly not the reason he was condemned to remain mortal. On the other hand, Adam fell from his pristine state of moral innocence by disobeying God's command. The only real thematic parallel is the question of personal faith. Adapa exercised it, while Adam failed. As Giorgio Buccellati observed, quote, this story is, I would submit, one of the few cases where Babylonian mythology presents us with a phenomenon of what one may properly call faith. Adapa has a personal relationship with Ea that prompts him to bear witness to his god, even in front of other gods and even at the risk of dangerous consequences, unquote. Here again, we see a situation where superficial similarities in the names, quote, Adam, unquote, and, quote, Adapa, unquote, and in the topic of immortality, led scholars to presume that the biblical story was borrowed from a Mesopotamian source. But on closer inspection, the minor parallels are washed out by the very substantial differences between the narratives. The most we can say is that all people yearn for immortality and offer various explanations for how it escaped them. The Adapa story, like much Mesopotamian material, identifies a human problem but gives an utterly inadequate explanation. Universal language and the confusion of speech. Another example of a proposed Hebrew borrowing from Sumerian literature that has dissolved on closer inspection is a passage in And Merker and the Lord of Arida, which Samuel Noah Kramer believed, quote, puts it beyond all doubt that the Sumerians believed that there was a time when all mankind spoke one and the same language, and that it was Enki, the Sumerian god of wisdom, who confounded their speech, unquote, implying that the biblical story, quote, goes back to cuneiform literary sources, unquote. Later study of this complicated text led others to conclude that this omen is not referring to a past golden age that was ended by the confusion of tongues, but just the opposite. It looks forward to a future glorious time when all people will praise Enlil in the same language. A golden age. The biblical idea of a past golden age for humans is not as prevalent in ancient literature as was once thought. In most accounts, the first people are primitive, and then later the gods give them culture so that they might better serve the gods. Interpreting the story of Enki and Ninhursag as a Golden Age myth is now seen as a figment of scholarly imagination. The search for similarities between Genesis and other literature led scholars to misinterpret the idioms in the opening lines of this myth so that they fit the Garden of Eden story. Once again, we find that seeking parallels can be misleading. One must never forget to look for differences and to keep the broader context of the passages in view. The creative word. In an Egyptian creation account from Memphis, the god Ptah speaks new things into existence. Quote, all the divine order really came into being through what the heart of Ptah thought and the tongue commanded. Unquote. This method of creation is certainly in line with the God of the Bible commanding, quote, let there be, unquote, and is a step above the standard sexual procreation method of creation found elsewhere. However, it seems strange to assert that Israel borrowed this unique concept from one among dozens of different Egyptian creation accounts, when the decrees of a king would be more familiar to the audience. There is no need to appeal to the similarities in a pagan creation account when the commands of any powerful leader will do. As already hinted, the standard model of creation in the ancient Near East is sexual procreation, or masturbation if only one god is involved. Pre-existing primordial water is the first gods, and through procreation, new generations of gods are produced, bringing greater differentiation in the material. Land, sky, air, rivers, etc., with each succeeding generation. Strikingly, the ex nihilo creation of the material world by a transcendent, immaterial, pre-existing god is unique to the Bible and has no parallel in the ancient Near East. Even the Egyptian god Ptah, who offers the closest parallel when he creates the other gods by thought and speech, is himself created from primordial water. Scholars who claim that Genesis 1:1 does not teach this run afoul of the many other passages that repeat the point that God spoke the universe into existence out of nothing. Psalm 33:6, 9, John 1:3, Romans 4:17, Hebrews 11:3. Humans from clay. Another off-sided parallel with Egyptian literature is the creation of people from clay on a potter's wheel by the god Khnum, which his consort Heket animates with the, quote, breath of life, unquote. But it appears that Canum creates every person and animal in this manner, not just the first man. Although the creation of people from clay mixed with the breath or blood of a god also occurs in many Mesopotamian texts, the clay theme itself is not universal. One text speaks of people springing up from the earth like grain, seeded by the blood of two gods. Another relates how people simply emerge from the ground as Enlil hoes it. Did Israel borrow myths as their prehistory? Despite the great variation in creation accounts, there are some significant similarities between Genesis and Mesopotamian accounts, especially the Atrahasis epic, regarding early human history. After people are created, they multiply, are nearly destroyed by a catastrophic flood, and afterward the survivors multiply again. Is this sequence something that the Hebrews borrowed from Mesopotamian sources, or is there a common memory from prehistorical times, example before writing, which the two cultures preserved? Most secular biblical scholars dismiss the idea of a great deluge as myth and can only imagine that Israel borrowed the story. It is interesting that many Assyriologists are willing to allow that the deluge stories may reflect an actual catastrophic historical or prehistorical event. In reviewing ancient texts for writing this article, I, J.B., found it interesting that all of the stories relating to the creation of humans treat people generically or in groups, cultured, uncultured, learned, unlearned, Sumerian, barbarian. No text presents the creation of a single person such as Adam or a first couple from whom all other people are descended. The most detailed creation account regarding humans is the Atrahasis epic, where the gods create seven couples from clay and the blood of a god. Given this generic creation of groups or of whole populations by the gods, most cultures apparently saw no need to explain how all races and peoples are descended from one couple. Thus, Sumerian genealogies trace political leaders' kingship in one region, but we find nothing like the Table of Nations, Genesis 10, or the Origin of Language Diversity, Genesis 11, in ancient Near Eastern literature. The other races and languages that any ancient people encountered were presumably explained as the creation of other gods, or as variant creations by their own gods. The uniqueness of the biblical creation account. Creation accounts served important functions in ancient cultures, telling people what their purpose in life was, justifying their political structure, and establishing their local god as the head of the pantheon. Outside of Israel, the purpose of humans was clear and simple: to supply the needs of their gods through the leadership of their king and priests. Beyond this universal theme, however, these creation accounts show such great variety in imagination that it does not appear their authors are intending to present as history the creative steps that their gods took to form the world. The creation story only serves as a backdrop to justify and establish the current sociological setting. The secular scholar views Genesis in a similar way, noting that it is an eclectic text, strangely borrowing themes from Egyptian, Mesopotamian, and possibly Canaanite sources. The Canaanite documents that would confirm this melting pot thesis are conveniently lacking to weave a monotheistic creation myth. However, reading these other creation accounts with an eye to spot their differences and not merely their similarities paints a different picture. Genesis tells of one transcendent God, who alone made and rules the heavens and the earth, and all that is in them. There is nothing left for any other God, if it exists, to do. And far from mankind being made to relieve God of work he did not like doing, they are dignified with his image, and with the task of ruling the creation in a wise and benevolent way. The painful toil people now experience is not a proper part of the creation. It results from human disobedience, which requires divine redemption. By affirming human unity in Adam and Eve, Genesis lays the foundation for Israel's calling to bring light to the world. The goal of early Genesis is not to entertain its listeners, nor to justify the political status quo, but to convey a history of God's actions in creating the world for man, its caretaker, to enjoy in fellowship with his creator. Of course, Genesis uses language and imagery that made sense to the original audience, but these images are universal, timeless, and transcultural, conveying a sequence of creation events both to primitive cultures and to modern scientific ones. It is only the presumption that Genesis cannot be relating history and revelation from God that leads many to seek other ways to account for the text. For those who do not have these biases, the uniqueness of Genesis is readily apparent if they read the other ancient accounts for themselves. Ancient Near Eastern parallels provide some helpful cultural insights, but they do not explain the Genesis creation account away.
Thank you for listening to another episode from the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, which provides audio articles of Christian Research Journal articles. If you go to equip.org, you will find a brand new article for the Christian Research Journal published weekly. In addition, please subscribe to our other podcasts. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you will find the Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, the Postmodern Realities podcast, which features interviews with Christian Research Journal authors, our flagship podcast, the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and the Hank Unplugged podcast, where CRI President Hank Hanegraaff takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting and informative people on the planet. At equip.org, you will also find a lot of resources to equip you, including many thousands of Christian Research Journal articles. That's equip.org.